Hey, this is Dylan Short, host of Locked On Braves, and you're listening to Locked On Yankees.
Sup, yo.
Welcome to the Locked On Yankees podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Stacey Gotsoulias, and I'm the host of Locked On Yankees. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Yankees, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at Stace Gotts. Please feel free to tweet questions or comments to either account. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. I hope you all enjoy today's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. This week, we're traveling back in time to three specific Yankee seasons. Today, we'll be looking back at 1990. I know, the people who were around in 1990 just cringed thinking about that season. The people who weren't around, buckle up, because it was something. I'm going to be talking about the season as a whole, bringing up, it was a hole, it was a black hole, talking about specific games, specific players. It's going to be a deep dive into 30 years ago. But first, you can get Locked On Yankees and all other Locked On podcasts straight to your phone in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Yankees. Let's jump right into 1990. The Yankees opened their season on April 12th, which seems really late, but that's when they started. So let's take a look back at April 12th in pop culture. The number one song that week was Love Will Lead You Back by Taylor Dayne. 15-year-old Stacy loved belting out that song dramatically in her room. Yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only one. And the movies that opened just before... Oh, let's go the day after. We'll go the day after. April 13th. The Gods Must Be Crazy 2, which I don't remember that being... I didn't remember there being a two. Ha! Must not have done well. Oh, Wild Orchid with Mickey Rourke and Carrie Otis, who became his wife after that. That was one of those... Mickey Rourke was always in erotic movies. If you ever saw 9 1/2 Weeks with Kim Basinger, Wild Orchid is in that vein as well. Our president at the time was George H.W. Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, or... What did Dana Carvey always say? George Herbert Walker Cougar Mellencamp Bush? Something like that. So I wrote a piece about the 1990 Yankees 7 years ago, and I called it The Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad 1990 Yankees. So this is what I said about the 1990 Yankees. I said, there's a reason people always reference that team when they make claims that the Yankees of today will revert back to the days of the 1990 Yankees. They were absolutely dreadful. And not only were they awful to watch, but it was as if we were all watching a real-life soap opera. You had a manager get fired in the place where he had one of his biggest moments as a player, the owner who was suspended from baseball because he had been battling one of his star players for nearly 6 years in regards to reneging on a payment to said player's charity, and who tried to discredit that player during court proceedings the previous year, and you had a pitcher throw a no-hitter and still lose the game. In some ways, if you were too young to witness the events of that year, you'd be considered lucky to have missed it. But the results of this particularly abysmal year also allowed the Yankees to make the moves that would get the ball rolling on the creation of the dynasty that won 3 out of 4 World Series later in the decade. So while we had to suffer through watching a disastrous season of baseball both on the field and off, we long-suffering Yankee fans were eventually rewarded for our patience. So here are some stats that I put together about the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad Yankees of 1990. They finished dead last in the American League Eastern Division with a record of 65-95. That's right, your New York Yankees nearly lost 100 games. I lived through it, I remember it well, it was not pleasant. Bucky Dent was the opening day manager, but he was gone 50 games into the season and replaced by Stump Merrill. To add insult to injury, Dent was fired before a game against the Boston Red Sox in Fenway Park. The team leader in innings was Tim Leary. He pitched 208. He finished with a 9-19 record. He also led the team in strikeouts with 138. Jesse Barfield led the team in batting with an OPS plus of 127 in 153 games. He only batted 246 and he hit 25 home runs and collected 78 runs. The starting rotation, which was made up of Leary, Dave LaPointe, Andy Hawkins, Chuck Carey, and Mike Witt, went 32-59 on the year. And while they were still bad, they played slightly better in the second half when Merrill was managing. They went 30-50 in the first half and 37-45 in the second half. Now, I mentioned that opening day was April 12th of 1990. This is your opening day lineup. Steve Sachs at second base, Alvaro Espinoza at shortstop, Don Mattingly at first base, Dave Winfield DH, Mel Hall left field, Jesse Barfield right field, Roberto Kelly center field, Bob Guerin was your catcher, and Mike Blowers played third base. The good news is the Yankees actually won their home opener against the Indians 6-4, and they were in first place until April 18th. Then they never saw it again. April 19th was the last day they had a record over 500, and it just got worse from there. But as bad as the 1990 Yankees were, there were a few teams that they actually could handle in 1990, which is nice. They had a 9-3 record against the Seattle Mariners, an 8-5 record against the Indians, and they even finished 7-6 against the Orioles. Their longest losing streak occurred from June 2nd to June 9th when they lost 6 games. This was also when Bucky Dent was fired and replaced by Stump Merrill. But things continued to get worse for the Yankees, and it wasn't necessarily because of what was happening on the field. On May 11th, 1990, the Yankees traded Dave Winfield to the California Angels for right-hander Mike Witt. It took a little while for the deal to actually go through. Winfield had 10-5 rights, so he had the right to reject any trade that came his way. But his contract included a list of 7 teams that he would agree to be traded to, and the Angels were on it. On May 12th of 1990, Winfield said, "This has nothing to do with the California Angels. I respect them, like them, the city, the weather. I played with manager Doug Rader in San Diego. Everything's cool. I have nothing bad to say about the Angels. I'm going to play for a lot of years for somebody, but it isn't going to be determined today where or when." Donald Fair, who was the executive director of the Players Association at the time, argued that the list was given to the Yankees under protest, and the club was aware that Dave Winfield had final say over any trade. Fair cited a deal from 1988 that almost sent Winfield to the Astros, but he rejected it. At the time, Winfield was in the final year of that 10-year deal that he signed in 1980, and he was actually looking for a contract extension from the Angels. On May 17th, they agreed to a 3-year deal worth $9.1 million, but Winfield was only guaranteed for the first season. If he was released before the 1991 campaign, he would receive a buyout of $2 million, plus an additional $450,000 to cover the following year. The other person involved in the trade, Mike Witt, was excited about joining the Yankees. He pitched to a 4.47 ERA with a 5.6 K per 9 and a 3.2 walk per 9 in 16 starts. As for Winfield, he hit 275, 348, 466 in 112 games, and he won the 1990 MLB Comeback Player of the Year award. I'd say things worked out well for Winfield. And speaking of working out and feeling good, it's time for me to gush about Built Bar. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Comes in 16 flavors, covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and they're easy to chew. They're low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, and high-fiber. As I've said many times, my favorite flavors are coconut almond, mint brownie delight, and salted caramel chocolate. Now, lucky for you, Built Bar is having a special this week. Now, for today only, you get a free pack of assorted Built Boost energy drink mix with your order. For this week, you can get $5 off every box which can be used in addition to the $10 off when you use the Locked On promo code. They're also releasing four new flavors this week: peanut butter banana, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pecan pie, and blueberry lemon. You can go to BuiltBar.com, put in the promo code Locked On, get $10 off your first order, and if you order anytime between today, May 25th, and May 31st, you'll get an additional $5 off every box of bars. You can get a sampler, where you get sent a bunch of flavors, you try them out, and if you like them, you can order them again. You can make up your own box, where you pick three flavors and get six bars each. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. And if you order between May 25th and May 31st, you get $5 off every box you order, in addition to the $10 off with the promo code LOCKEDON. This podcast is sponsored by the audiobook edition of 24, Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid. In this reflective and inspirational memoir, the legendary Willie Mays shares the inspirations and influences responsible for guiding him on and off the field. Widely regarded as the greatest all-around player in baseball history, the beloved Willie Mays offers people of all ages his lifetime of experience meeting challenges with positivity, integrity, and triumph. This special audiobook production includes a foreword read by Bob Costas and a bonus conversation with Willie Mays and his co-author John Shea. Whether you miss seeing your favorite players on the field this season or are looking for the perfect Father's Day gift, 24 is the inspiring story of one of sports fans' favorite living legends. Buy the audiobook edition of 24 now, wherever audiobooks are sold. Now, I want to go back to the Steinbrenner stuff, because even before the season started, Commissioner Faye Vincent announced that he was going to be investigating Steinbrenner's relationship with Howard Spira. Spira, a Bronx gambler and all-around good guy, just kidding, claimed he was paid by Steinbrenner to discredit slugger Dave Winfield in the ongoing fight between Winfield and Steinbrenner. So that fight began after Steinbrenner apparently reneged on a payment to Winfield's charity. This was a stipulation in Winfield's original 10-year contract that was signed in 1980. When people talk about the Bronx Zoo of the 1970s, they should include the Steinbrenner of the 80s in that same category because he was a menace. So after the trade happened with the Angels, things began to unravel for Steinbrenner. He claimed it wasn't his idea to trade away Winfield, which was BS. In July, he was fined $225,000 for tampering with the Winfield trade. Then he was called into hearings with Faye Vincent shortly after. On July 30th, Steinbrenner agreed to step down as general partner because of his involvement with Howard Spira. Even more amazing is that in mid-August, Steinbrenner named Robert Niederlander as his successor, and Niederlander was actually his third choice. Steinbrenner asked his son Hank to replace him as general partner, but Hank declined. Could you imagine? We could have had Hank Steinbrenner running the Yankees in 1990. How different would the Yankees' future had been if he had taken over back then? No offense to Hank, may he rest in peace, but I shudder even thinking about it. As I mentioned earlier, not all things were bad for the Yankees. There was a bright spot. His name was Kevin Moss. On June 29th, Moss made his debut with the Yankees. He was inserted into the lineup as the DH. He went 1-for-3 with a single and a strikeout. Nothing earth-shattering happened in those first few games. He mainly hit singles, he walked, he occasionally struck out. But then something amazing happened. His first big game just happened to be on July 4th, when he hit his first home run of the season in a 13-6 loss to the Royals. He ended up walking twice in that game as well. But this was just a glimpse into what was to come. 2 days later, Moss hit his first major league double in the second game of a doubleheader against the Twins, and he hit his first Yankee Stadium home run the following day. He was absent from the lineup until July 14th against the White Sox. He went 3-for-5 with 5 runs batted in and 2 home runs. Now, as I wrote in my article, I said, of course the Yankees lost because the team was awful, but the legend of Kevin Moss was growing. Shortly after that performance against the White Sox, he went on a tear against Texas in Arlington, hitting 3 home runs in 3 games. Again, all losses by the Yankees. But by the time that series ended, New York fans had a new favorite player in pinstripes. Mas played in 71 games that season. He finished with 21 home runs. He hit 8 home runs in July, 8 more in August, and 5 in September. He also set a major league record by reaching the 10 home run plateau in only 72 at-bats. He ended up finishing second in the Rookie of the Year vote, losing to Sandy Alomar Jr. Because of this performance, people believed that Mas was the real deal and that perhaps he would help the Yankees turn things around in subsequent seasons, but that wasn't meant to be. Mas's star fizzled as he was given more playing time and he was released by the Yankees before the 1994 season. Now let's get to the game that encapsulates the 1990 Yankees. Andy Hawkins' no-hitter. Usually, when a guy throws a no-hitter, his team wins. Not the 1990 Yankees. They ended up losing the game 4-0, proving that it is possible to lose a no-hitter by 4 runs. Now, the game was going well for the Yankees and for Hawkins until the bottom of the 8th. Unfortunately for Andy Hawkins, his team couldn't get anything going against Greg Hibbard or Barry Jones. The game was 0-0 in that bottom of the 8th. The inning started off fine. Hawkins got Ron Karkovice and Scott Fletcher to pop out to second base. Then the game began to unravel. Sammy Sosa, yeah, he played on the White Sox, remember? Reached on an E5, then stole second while Ozzie Guillen was batting. Then Hawkins issued back-to-back walks to Guillen and Lance Johnson, which was followed by a Robin Ventura fly ball to left. Normally, that would have been the third out of the inning, but not for the 1990 Yankees. Jim Leyritz, committed an error that allowed Sosa, Guillen, and Johnson to score, and the White Sox went up 3-0. But the terrible, horrible, no-good, very bad Yankees weren't done there. Yvonne Calderon hit a long fly ball to right center field. That could have been the third out, but was botched by Jesse Barfield, and Ventura scored the 4th run. Thankfully for Hawkins, Dan Pasqua did him a solid and hit a fly ball to shortstop that wasn't botched by Alvaro Espinoza. Maybe the Yankees should have had the infielders play the outfield that inning, since they were all able to catch fly balls for Hawkins. The Yankees actually reached on an error in the top of the 9th when Steve Balboni hit the ball to third and Ventura bungled a play, but that was quickly erased when Barfield hit into a double play that the White Sox didn't bungle, and the Yankees lost the game. The 1990 Yankees finished 21 games behind the Red Sox in the final division standings, and their final lineup on October 3rd, 1990 looked like this. Roberto Kelly, Don Mattingly, Jesse Barfield, Kevin Mas, Hensley Mullins, Jim Leyritz, Brian Dorsett, Randy Velarde, Jim Whalewander. I do not remember that name. Anyway, they lost to the Tigers 10-3 in Yankee Stadium. Jack Morris was the winning pitcher. Steve Atkins picked up the loss. Here are some important transactions from 1990. February 17th, Mariano Rivera was signed as an amateur free agent. On April 29th, they traded Luis Polonia to the California Angels and received Rich Monteleone and Claudel Washington. As I mentioned, May 11th, they traded Winfield to the Angels. They got Mike Witt. June 4th, they traded Lance McCullers and Clay Parker to the Tigers. They received Matt Noakes. The 1990 draft was held on June 4th. Carl Everett, Shane Spencer, Ricky Ledet, Jorge Posada, and Andy Pettitte were all picked. Both Pettitte and Posada signed in 1991, while the rest of the players signed in 1990. They released Deion Sanders on September 24th, and Dave Rigetti was granted free agency on November 5th of 1990. And here are some miscellaneous facts about the 1990 Yankees. Wayne Tolleson wore number 2. Dave LaPointe wore number 42. No one wore number 46, but Steve Balboni was one number away with 45. And perhaps the most important nugget of information from the 1990 season is that they actually won on My Sweet 16. They won 4-3 in 11 innings against the Brewers. and Lee Guterman got the win. So when I wrote my article about the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad Yankees of 1990, we were in the midst of the 2013 season. And 2013 was not a great season, but compared to 1990, the 2013 squad seems like a World Series winning team. And I know I'm going to sound like an old lady when I say this, but when the kids these days complain about the Yankees, I just laugh and would like to put them into a time machine so they can actually witness the 1990 Yankees. So I hope you enjoyed that trip back 30 years. I know it wasn't that pleasant because of how bad the 1990 Yankees were, but if you weren't around, now you know all about them. So that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode was brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and save $10 off your first order by using the promo code LOCKEDON. I'd like to remind you that you can subscribe to this show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We would really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your Monday and join me next time when we hop into the time machine and go back 20 years to the year 2000.